Hello and welcome to Happy Place. Lovely to have you here. This is the show where we step into the lives of others for just a few minutes in order to really see things a little differently. I'm Fern Cotton and today we meet the comedian who became a psychotherapist. It is, of course, the remarkable Ruby Wax.
Okay, every part of your body is fighting you. It's going, come on, you idiot, what are you focusing on this for? But gradually, like, pain doesn't stay in the same place. It moves around.
If you've ever wondered how all of this mindfulness works, the science behind it all, this is the episode for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And now, should we do it? Here's the show. So I'm about to go round to Ruby Wax's house, which is rather lovely. I've met Ruby a few times, but I mean a long, long time ago. So I'm really looking forward to just having a catch up with her and chatting about her amazing new life and career. She's gone from being one of the most sort of respected and loved comedians in the UK to now being this mindfulness guru, having received a master's from Oxford University and gone on to write these fantastic books. I'm so looking forward to chatting more about how she's done all of that and how many people she's now helping with that new knowledge and passion in life.
Hi, I'm so sorry. I couldn't get a taxi. Don't worry.
Oh, shit. I'm really
sorry.
Don't
worry. Look, do whatever you've got to do.
No, I'm here.
Are you good?
Now, when I say it was a few years ago, I'm talking over a decade. So we have quite a lot to catch up on. And some memories we would rather both properly forget.
I'm trained so I can deal with the trauma. Go bring it up. Come
on. This one is still pretty raw for me. We were, I was about 18 or 19. I was a child.
Like 23. Yeah.
We were on Comic Relief's Fame Academy together.
Yeah. Living in a house.
Out first.
I don't care. I couldn't sing.
I was.
And I stuck it to the end.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone loved you. I was booted right out.
That's because nobody knew who you were then.
No, they didn't.
And then you had the last laugh.
I was a child with an awful haircut. Couldn't sing. I was so overwhelmed by the whole experience. I just couldn't.
Oh no, because you know these shows are a horror show now. But I was in there with Jo Brand, that's already good. But she had to leave every night because she was lactating, and they let her go. Remember, she was breastfeeding.
That just completely went over my head.
You didn't know.
I was too
anything.
In awe of everyone, and then I parked that one. Yeah. And I don't know if I've seen Ruby since then.
No, you haven't.
I haven't
since Jo Brand and I did Cheeky Girls, which I thought was going to relaunch my career. I thought I looked fabulous, and then I saw it. 13 million viewers saw my ass like a wedding train hanging out of my shorts. But the good news is she looked worse. So it's okay.
I forgot that you did that. That's made my day.
I came in second.
I've blocked it. I've suppressed it so far.
No, I've
down.
Had more embarrassing. So that was a highlight.
Okay, great. I'm so glad.
That was a highlight.
Thank you for writing your books because I love them so much and I didn't want them to end. And
I'm writing another one now and it hurts so much.
Why?
I have to open the cervix again. Because, you know, it's just you and it, and you see the horror of how bad your writing is. But after the
Not step, bad in the
it's slightest. Bad in the beginning.
Right, okay.
It's really bad. And so I have to look at it now. I was in a cafe screaming at what was coming out of my hands because I'm dyslexic, so it's not English.
Mm.
And gradually I translate, and gradually it becomes English.
Oh, and it's the most beautiful English because I just literally gulped those books down. And I'm obviously fascinated in that subject matter and research it as much as I can. But I was taking away so many new thoughts that I hadn't really stumbled across before. So thank you so much for that.
Fern, so, what have you been doing?
Oh, just list bits the shows. And bobs.
List the shows. Go oh, on, not give even, it to
you
me.
You know what? Okay, so after I saw you,
yeah,
I did a bunch of stuff, lots of different shows. I did
every
stuff
show.
In America, stuff
every
here.
Show.
But then yeah. I found myself going, what's this all about?
Yeah.
What's this all about? I had kids and what am I doing? And I'd sit in meetings and I'd think, oh, please like me. Please accept me. Please, you
That's
know.
The beauty of television.
Yeah, you feel yeah. like shit about yourself all the time. So then I started to veer off and do other things. And now I am the happiest, well, in my life and career, but certainly career, than I've ever been. Because I'm talking about things that I
yeah, see,
so care about.
The only ones that make it through are ones either with no brain. Those are the lucky ones. Mm. They hold on to the career because they assume they had one. Mm. Or, you know, at a certain moment, you're kicked out of the party rather
yeah,
than
yeah.
you leave the party. So I had good timing because I was just about to, you know, lose my job. And you chose to leave. You weren't replaced.
Yeah,
were
but you?
You
sense that
the end is nigh.
Yeah, yeah, or that things are so different that you don't fit in that anymore.
Yeah, like I don't know about you, but I lost my mojo.
Yeah,
and people go, "How could you do that? Because you have the job everybody wants." But I'd be staring into the face of the person I was interviewing, and I didn't give a shit.
Yeah,
didn't give a shit unless they were so interesting.
Yeah, 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 of course.
But eventually, the list is not A anymore. Mm. You know, because it is all. Starting with B and going down to Z. Mm. And I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't care that you've been in a reality show. In fact, it shows on my face. I'm not Graham Norton. I can't get that erection smile. It shows hatred. My eyes show exactly. Mm. And they said that's not palatable for
TV. It just doesn't make you feel good. You go home and just think, you know, you're lucky. You've got a job. Great. Whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You don't, it's not that, you know, now I feel very lucky. And I'm sure you feel the same with all of your writing and the shows that you do that. You live and breathe it, and it's your fire, and you're geared up every day. I'm excited every day that I go and record a podcast or, you know, writing a book or doing a radio thing because I'm talking about stuff that yeah. I'm connecting with people. I feel really lucky that I get to do that now.
Well, you're also lucky that you wanted it.
Yeah.
You know, those are the blessed. I mean, yeah. It took me a while to figure it out. Because it's not like, oh, I think I'll leave TV and do this.
Yeah.
I kind of, to be honest, got thrown out. Not thrown out, but I got ill. Mm. And then I was too vulnerable. You know, yeah. I got sick.
Yeah.
And then I thought, okay, got to reinvent. Because this isn't, I'm not going to hold on to this job with this depression.
Yeah.
So I wrote a show about it so that I got them before they got me. Because you can't fire me from a stage show.
I know I've read a lot about and heard you talk prolifically about the extent of that period of your life and that you were institutionalized and that you had a really horrendous breakdown that you went through. At what point in your life did you first feel depressed or understand what depression meant or know that something was not quite
not right? You know, I had it as a little kid, but who knew what that was?
Well, exactly.
Because
yeah.
my mother, you know, it was only 10 minutes ago, they thought you were possessed by the devil. I thought she was. And nobody had that word. Mm. And my mother used to howl like a wild woman. You know, the kind you'd see in Jane Eyre things, where there's a screaming person in a turret. So that was my mom. I didn't realize it was a disease. I thought that was her personality. Anyway, they didn't commit. The police would come over every Saturday because she didn't smoke on Saturdays. And they'd go, Chicago, right? His mother is going through a change of life. You know, meaning menopause?
Yeah.
I said, she's had it for 87 years. Anyway, then when I got sick, nobody knew what that was either until I had my kids. And then they said, this is depression. And then I felt good because I didn't feel good, but I got medication.
Yeah.
Because now you have a way of dealing with it.
So do you remember that first time where you thought, what the hell is going on? Like, what's up? Why do I feel, why I'm probably assuming everyone else feels all right and I don't.
Yeah,
what
yeah. Well, I felt it since a kid, you know.
Really? Like a tiny, tiny kid?
No, but there's a difference between feeling weird and freakish,
which
is my theme song, always like not invited, and freaked when I, you know, a little weirdo when I am and have to fake being normal. But the sickness, I remember feeling every few years, you know, where you feel like you're walking through some, you know, jelly and you can't get the mojo. There's no personality and you have to fake who you used to be. So you have a big shit-eating grin on your face and meanwhile, nobody can tell. Nobody tells us something's wrong. So I had it a long time. Then if you don't take care of it, it gets harder and stronger and longer. So that's why 12 years ago, maybe more, then I couldn't fake it anymore. Then that was the drop dead moment. Mm. Then I came out and said, okay, now I'm going to study something. So that I, not that you can cure it, but that I can deal with it.
So is that to unpick it and to understand every element of it?
No, nobody understands it.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
why we're still living with...
Well, exactly.
Yeah, they never gave the money for the one thing that could have cured a lot of... other. Anyway, but let's not go into the politics of it. But that sort of launched me, and I built a career in the beginning. Many have followed since. And my illness. And I think if you've got it, use it. And
well,
now
absolutely.
Everybody talks about depression.
Yeah.
I've got to get a new thing.
No, don't. Because as you say, we still don't know enough about it. Or certainly there's still so many, you know, myths around and people not really understanding the weight of it or how it can
or
affect
that
you. Because
it's not
tangible.
Changed, though. I know, but it's changed. Well, either is, you know, any disease, you can't see it.
Yeah,
so why do
yeah.
they get sympathy cards?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's not... I do what I can with my frazzled cafes, you know, where people can meet and compare notes. And that's part of the relief. And then I haven't written shows about it because if you go on and on and on, it starts to look like your theme song. And I never wanted to have a theme song again. So I'm interested in the mind because I don't think anything's more interesting.
Mm.
Nothing.
And it's endless.
Well, you know, I mean, everything comes from the mothership.
Mm.
And for those of us who always wanted to know, you know, at 18, now they can look in and you can see your brain.
Mm.
So this is just to me like new drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you had that bad episode and you were then, you know, it was given a name and you could take medication. Is that around the same time that you also heard mindfulness battered around the,
no,
for the
I
first
never
time?
Heard, you... I never heard of that. And no, it was when Marina was born, my last kid. And then the guy said, you've got yourself a disease here, you know, because you think it's your imagination where, you know, when you look at a menu, you think, does it matter if I walk in front of a car or have a cheeseburger?
Mm.
You know, everything's got pretty much the same votes. And then you get really scared to move around because you can't choose right or left.
Yeah.
And you think, am I being a wanker? Is this just because I got so much going for me that I think, okay, I'm going to shut down?
And but isn't that part of it as well, the shame around it and the sort of self-flagellation afterwards?
Yeah, the shame is an extra yeah. bonus prize you get.
Mm.
I always say it's like, it's not those usual, oh, you're an asshole or you're not good enough. It's more like white noise.
Mm.
And I've said before, if the devil had Tourette's, that's what it would sound like. Mm. It's just pure abuse.
Mm.
But once you have it, you can't do anything about it. It's not like go perk up like I didn't think of that one or eat grapefruits. If people tell you that.
And eat grapefruits.
Well, you know, jog.
Yeah. Cashews. Yeah,
yeah,
I've heard that one.
Yeah, get something homeopathic.
Yeah.
It doesn't work, sweetheart. This is cancer, you know.
Mm.
I mean, unless you believe in alternatives, which go for, but I kind of don't.
Mm. So for you, mindfulness was the...
No, I looked a lot of stuff. I looked at a lot of stuff. And only 12 years ago after the big, big one, I was trying anything. I didn't care. But I'm pretty practical, so I researched it. And it had the best evidence in scientific journals. Doesn't mean it's 100%, but it was the most evidence that it was successful. That cognitive therapy and medication were top of the line. That doesn't mean it works for everybody, but I thought, oh, well, okay, I'll try that.
And but then, you went to the extreme of that. I'm going to go to Oxford.
Well,
and
I am an extreme. Yeah, that's like extreme sport, but they were teaching it there and they weren't teaching witchcraft. So I thought there might be something to this. And part of the course is showing you what happens in your brain. Now, if you don't believe in the brain, I can't help. You know, if you're a Mormon or whatever, I can't. It's you're not. Go have a wonderful life. But I do believe in seeing. If I can't see it, I'm not a. I don't throw angel cards. You can see the results of these exercises just the way you can see a six-pack if you do sit-ups. It's a no-brainer. You're not enlightened. You're not having bliss. Your thoughts aren't going away. It's just you're building a muscle that's able to pull down pull down the bubbling cortisol, and that's the disease of everything.
Because I love that in...
But it is not 100%.
No, but you describe that in your book brilliantly, and with all the stats shown that you can reduce... What's that funny bit at the back of your head called that I can never pronounce?
No, the amygdala is your alarm button.
Yes.
So you can reduce
You can shrink that by doing regular meditation or whatever mindfulness
exercise. Yeah, and there's other things. You know, people who do... like martial arts, but they're taking their focus into their body. You know, once you focus in, even athletes get it, immediately the amygdala goes down. Mm-hmm. But you have to do it on purpose. You can't just go to a gym and you're reading a magazine and watching TV and, you know, smoking a cigarette. You have to kind of intentionally take your focus into your body or a specific area. Then your thoughts come. Then you take it back down. Then your thoughts, not all day, like for a minute. And that then the amygdala shrinks and the insula gets bigger and bigger. And that's the bit that engages when you focus on your body or focus on your... Anytime you go to something physical, even if it's for a split second, you're building the muscle in another part that'll help you anchor when the stress comes in and knocks you down.
So when you started studying this, did you have a moment where you thought, wait, I'm practicing this daily or I'm studying about it daily and... Oh my God, I'm noticing the effects. It's happening.
It's too slow.
It was an incremental build.
It's incremental, yeah. It's like, you know, when you go to the gym, what's the moment that you see?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you stop it, you think, well, why is it going away? And you think, sweetheart, you stopped it.
So it's daily discipline.
It's, yeah. Or, you know, the point is you're teaching yourself not to whip yourself when you don't do something. And if it isn't for you and you're whipping yourself, please let it go. Because that's the main thing is... Stop the anger, and the shame. But you can't do it by saying it to yourself. It's like saying, don't smoke a cigarette. You're going to smoke more. So then learning a little bit about how brains work, you understand where we get those negative thoughts. I mean, that's in How to Be Human. And once you know, you forgive a little bit. Like, everybody's got the same mechanism.
Completely. And also, nobody wants to hear that it's good that you learn about this and it's good that you practice it daily and it becomes a discipline. They want a quick fix or
a magic... Everybody has your top tips.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's not that. It's
nothing
it's a new way of thinking about your whole life and an everyday discipline that you have to stick to. There's no...
But everything you learned, you know, from doing TV to learning math or language or crawling... to walking, it had to happen every day. Nothing happens overnight. Nothing. Yeah.
But that's how, I guess, modern culture has...
But that's why we're in trouble.
Well, exactly. We've ended up in a place where it is a quick fix for anything because we can get anything so quickly. But this is something that, of course, takes that time and effort and energy and complete and utter discipline. And that's what...
But it's not hard. I mean, that's the funny thing. It's much easier than doing a sit-up.
Well, it's only hard today because we're so used to distractions and we're so used to
the
constant bombardment
of
information.
Yeah.
And that's what we're possibly...
Well, addicted to.
Yeah, we're addicted to it. And we're not understanding that addiction, possibly. Because the bit that I loved / freaked me out in your book was... when you talked about the dopamine hit we're getting when we look at our phones. And I've always obviously known, don't look at my phone too much. But then sometimes I get lured into, oh, I'm answering loads of emails. I'm being so efficient today.
Yeah.
And I'm really being proactive. And then I was like, but wait, I'm still getting a little dopamine hit from that, from going, well done me. Or oh, somebody likes me, they've emailed me something.
But it's, you know, you are being, I mean, that's the conundrum is you are being efficient, but you're being addicted to. And the problem is we can't tell the difference.
No.
And let's not pick around. You're never going to know the difference. But there's a moment where I can't explain it. I get addicted to because we all need a hit. And they've taken drugs for me and I can't drink anymore. So at least like let me buy a few cushions at 2 in the morning. It's all that's left for me. You know, but there's a moment where it makes me sick.
Yeah.
And so that's why I kind of practice this so that I can, when I'm at the 10,000th email and I'm answering spam and it's got nothing to do with being efficient, there's a part of your brain you're training that observes behavior.
Yeah.
It's what a therapist is paid for, but you have a bit of your brain, which you can, in a scanner, you know, you can see the muscle build up. It's got a name. I don't have to say it because I'll sound, you know.
Please say it.
Anterior cingulate cortex. There, I'm a wanker. But
I love that.
Yeah, when they talk like that, I get excited.
Yeah, it's exciting.
But there's an area, and you can see more white matter that gives you the ability to sit back and watch. That doesn't mean you don't engage. Everybody always says, oh, well, then are you separate? No, but when the shit hits the fan, you might want to stand back a little bit rather than go into your trigger of how dare you, you know, and get the anger. Mm-hmm. It lets you pause. That's all. Pause before you turn into the reptile.
And learning about your own patterns. You know, I know that my pattern is this and my reaction will usually be this. And then, so it's not a big, like, you know, crescendo when it happens. You go, oh, well, this again. I know that I do this.
Yeah, it's
all
like
the time.
A record now. It's like, of course I feel it. I'm angry. I'm jealous. Yeah. I have envy like you wouldn't believe. But there's a little pause that goes, maybe this is just a habit. You know, maybe it's not true.
Yeah.
It's a shrink would say that to you, but now you're saying it to you. So you're saving a lot of money.
Yeah. Because I had a slight epiphany recently whenever anyone says something horrible about me, which is often because I'm in the public eye, I have a really strange visceral reaction, and it's always quite a sort of strong one. I can go off for a couple of days feeling really shitty, and it's like the other day I thought, why am I doing this? Let me break down what this feeling is. So right, someone, Bob from Birmingham, has said that I'm a shit presenter or whatever it is, and I don't only believe what he's saying and sort of forget about all the things that I know I'm capable of. I believe what he's saying, but I go a step further, and that then weirdly morphs into, and this is the bit that I worked out, I'm a bad person. Mm. I don't know how I've made any correlation between any of that, but I am a bad person. And then comes the shame and the self-loathing, which is my default setting is self-loathing. You know, I'm a piece of shit. I'm not smart enough. I could have done better.
Do you know that everybody in the world has it?
Of course, of course. Yeah. But for me, for the first time, I realized, holy shit, I'm not a bad person. I don't need to waste 2 days feeling like shit. I can probably do this in about an hour. And through mindfulness and you know, sort of learning about this sort of thing and talking to interesting people, I've managed to squish it into an hour of rumination and what the fuck and a bit of anger, and then I'll let that go.
Squishing to an hour is good.
Good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Squishing
really
to an hour.
Do you think that your mindfulness discipline now and whatever exercises you partake in have hopefully sort of sped up your recovery time if you're going through a bad
patch? I squish it more faster than an hour?
Not an hour, but I mean, if you're having a, you know, if you've...
I can let it rip, right? And we're never supposed to lose that reptile part, because if I was being mugged and I'm like, you know, giving you a little smile and a handshake, I'm dead. So we need the reptile. That's, you can't throw the bath out with the baby, whatever. But recently, somebody hits my trigger and it goes into a snowball effect of generally I'm an idiot and I'm being taken advantage of and everybody's ripping me off because they see that I'm an idiot. There's my theme. And I let them have it, and with sweat running down me, and then the pause came. It's too late, right? But at least I called them and I lied. I said, you know, Ed's mom's really sick, and so I'm really, really, you know. And then you can feel my toxicity. You know, my cortisol starts to come down.
Yeah.
You can do this for selfish reasons, because every time you let it rip, you're poisoning yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what gives you every disease under the sun. Not mental, even.
Physical.
Physical. You want to go down because somebody gave you a ticket or Bob said your thing was... well, you got the heart attack. He didn't.
Well, this is it, because everybody's living in such a state
to kill
of anxiety.
Bob,
right, yeah.
If you need to do it, then just go ahead and do it.
Yes, if Bob is a bad guy.
If he's in front of you.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What I love about your books also is you offer up all of these, you know, a real understanding of mindfulness, which I should actually probably start with. To you, what is mindfulness? Because we should probably do that first. So because mindfulness gets battered about all the time. And a lot of people go, I think I know, it's like, isn't it meditating? But they don't really get what it means.
Or they make a colouring book.
Yeah, or they make a colouring book. Or they feel like it's just not anywhere near their universe. You know, it's nothing, I don't know anything about it. So what does mindfulness mean to you?
The thing I studied at Oxford, it was called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And cognitive therapy, which is like the most, you know, the national health offer it's a real practical therapy. And which is you don't have to go back into your story and its parents. This could take years. But it's doing exactly what you just did. It's noticing that every time Bob writes you a letter, you think you hate yourself. So it's watching cognitively your habits.
Yeah.
But they have you write it down. Like you go, I walk into a room, everybody hates me. And eventually you start to describe the feeling. And by just watching that every time you hit that trigger, it's if a friend told you, you'd go, wait a minute, this isn't reality. Mm. So gradually you're... And again, the physiological thing is those neurons are unwiring when you break a pattern, and they create new patterns because everything psychological is physical.
Yeah.
There's no little guy up there shouting. You're changing your brain.
Yeah.
So that's how you break the pattern. So mindfulness bit is, let's be practical. First of all, A, in a world of distraction, it helps you pay attention. B, is it does lower the cortisol. So that's... You know, once you get the red mist down, you can focus on other people. So it's a thing that helps you connect to other people, because if you're just in your world of self-loathing, I can't help you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be practical, some people could describe it in a more airy-fairy way. Mine is, it's an exercise to get that amygdala down, and that's the button that causes everything else. It doesn't mean it stays down. It doesn't mean you're now walking in a kind of vegetable state. It means that you're holding back your, you know, the cortisol. And then when you need it, you switch it on again.
Yeah.
So everybody else is burning out around you. Mm. Because when I want to go into turbo, I can. But right, like yesterday, you know I'm sick. In the past, I'd force myself to keep working and then really get sick and maybe even hit a mental thing. And now I kind of can tell I'm at my tipping point. But just because I'm weak from going to India, that I have to really cool it down.
Mm.
Because you can hear your internal temperature. So I can hear when there's a depression coming. And only if you can hear it can you do something about it.
Mm.
You shut down that social media. You don't invite 1,000 people to your house because now you really feel like you're a fake.
Mm.
You go, wait a minute, this is a real disease. I can hear it. So if you don't take pity on you, nobody else is going to.
And then what's your next move? Sitting it out? How do you deal with you have a bad patch like that?
Well, I know it's coming. I had it 5 years ago. There's no questions. Maybe somebody hits a trigger. Depression to me is just a brain disease. Like, why did I get Alzheimer's? Well, you got it. Okay. Nothing triggered it. It's genes and it's nature and nurture. You want to go into it, you know, then go become a neuroscientist. But it's both. Everybody says, did I get it from my mother? Well, if you have brothers and sisters, then they'd all have it.
Mm.
So it's more complicated. So when I could feel it coming, different than before, where I'd accept a lot of jobs and show up at events, save the puffin. I went to a charity. I thought, what the hell am I doing here?
Well, just to keep busy, just to keep your mind off.
I didn't want to look in. So
yeah.
Real busy, because that doesn't work at all in the end. That's when you really burn. And then, so I checked in a retreat that was 29 pounds and that was silent, you know, just, and I sat it out. That doesn't mean it doesn't hurt like beyond the Valley of the Dolls and the devil comes into your head. But because I didn't get depressed about depression, I lost it after 5 days rather than 5 months. So I love the expression, if you run from the monster, it'll chase you. But if you look at it, he runs from you.
Mm.
There was no cure for this thing. But it meant that, you know, you bite the bullet. It's horrifying. The noise comes. But it goes faster.
And that's because understand it now. And because
well, it's a disease. Why add shame when it's a disease? Would I shoot myself if my leg was broken?
Yeah.
But if you logically think that, you'll still do the habit. If you first cool your brain down and you practice doing that, then you can think clearer. Otherwise, you know, we go, don't do so much shopping, don't do that. If being, you know, acrimonious, if that worked, I'm dyslexic. If that worked, then nobody would smoke, nobody would drink, nobody would
do
late night shopping. If we yell ourselves more, we're going to do that habit more. That's just the way, again, it's a human feature.
Yeah, but that's your understanding that's got you to that point. Because, Ruby, when I had a big bad patch, you know, and I wasn't a kid. I was a full-grown adult, and there was a specific catalyst that really sent me off. And I did probably about a year in a vortex of hell, and I didn't understand any of it. And I didn't understand...
How long ago?
Not long ago, in the last 10 years.
Right.
And I didn't understand any of it. And it was all, you know, an undercurrent of shame, you know, subterranean levels of self-loathing. It was all piled on, you know, underneath it. But now, you know, that was kind of condensed into a year or so. It's a bit of a blur. But then subsequently since, and now I've dedicated most of my career and my life, because it's become a passion, in sort of trying to understand it more or talk to interesting people about it. I, in a similar way to you, can... I know you're not detaching yourself from it because it's happening, but I guess it's the language you use. It's not I'm depressed. There is depression. There I love that depression. You use that in your book.
I used it.
There is depression.
Thought,
yes.
No, that's a good one.
No, that was from your book, Ruby.
Yeah, but I stole there it from somebody depression. Else.
Well, whoever thought of it is a genius, because that acknowledgement that it's happening, but it doesn't mean that it's you.
It's the whole reality.
Person,
yeah.
You fucked up. It's there, and you do whatever it takes and whatever works for you to move out of those. And like you said about the staring it in the face thing, I have that specifically with panic attacks. If I feel one coming on, rather than go, oh my God, right, windows down in the car, what do I do? Panic. I go, in my head now, my new thing in the last year has been, bring it on. Bring it on. Come on then, let's have a full-blown panic attack. And it goes. It just, it's
well,
not going to happen
to everyone.
Focus
on the sensation. It's just a sensation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You
know,
they're thoughts.
It's thoughts. Mm. And if you look at, if not look at and try to figure them out, because that'll send you into a whirlwind. But part of it is the minute you focus again, it's always on a physical sensation, which is a panic attack.
Yeah.
If you focus on exactly where heartache is or panic, it's so counterintuitive. Then it's just feelings.
Yeah.
And thoughts are just thoughts. Mm. Okay, every part of your body is fighting you. It's going, come on, you idiot. What are you focusing on this for? But gradually, like, pain doesn't stay in the same place. Mm. It moves around. And somebody said pain is, I didn't say this, pain is pain, but suffering is optional. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
I didn't make that up either.
I like that a lot.
Well, I had a good teacher at
I
Oxford.
I really
yeah.
like that a lot. But like, you know, that's what I loved about your book, is I kept making little notes in the border and stuff, because there are sentences like that that you can apply to those situations that do feel overwhelming or overbearing or unwanted and go, okay, I understand this. I understand what's happening.
But that's not enough.
No,
you know,
the discipline
yeah.
is also needed.
Is to say, send the focus to the breathing, or send the focus to your feet on the ground. Okay, your thoughts will take you, send it back down, and you'll feel like an idiot. But even if you do it back of a taxi, in a tube, whatever, that thing is making that six pack in your insula stronger, which means the next time it hits, you can feel the depression rather than just go, oh my God, my life is over.
So is breathing the one for you? Is that the way that
you
hook into
it? Yeah, I do like listening too. You know, if you are in the tube and you just, you know, it's any sense. So if you just listen, then watch your thoughts creep in, then listen, then watch your thoughts. Any physical sensation.
Because I liked how you talked about mindfulness with your kids in Frazzled, and saying, so you pretend they're an owl and then they have to listen out for
kids,
the sounds.
Yeah.
And I have small kids, and I thought, what a great way of them getting out of a rage they're in or obsessing over this chocolate bar they want, to actually listen and to be in the moment and to focus. It's hard for adults, but for little kids, oh my God, it's near impossible.
There's all these little games like, what is it? Giving, like, they put a toy on the kid's stomach. Again, he has to practice. And they watch him give the toy a ride. And so the kid learns to send their focus to the breathing.
I love that.
Or there's a, you know, the... Is this in How to Be Human or Frazzled?
That's in Frazzled.
Right. The kid shakes it up and the teacher says, this is your mind. And, you know, you have to just wait, hold it still and watch it all settle. And the kid understands, the calmer I am, the more my mind will settle. Mm. Or with the puppy, you know, if it's wild and it keeps jumping on your leg, if you kick it, it comes back. Mm. But if you stroke it and you're nice to it, the puppy calms down.
Yeah.
They
I love that because, you know, obviously, parenting's really hard sometimes, and your kids are like wild animals. And to actually stop and do some mindfulness for yourself to then deal with them properly and to by osmosis, hopefully they pick that up. It's hard, but to know that it exists and that it can be a tool to use is a wonderful comfort, I think.
Yeah.
What I love about your book is that obviously...
I love that you love my book.
I keep going on about
them. Do you love the book?
I really love them. You have all of these tips and very practical takeaways that you can try and use, but also there's some spot-on observations about why at the moment, you know, you look at statistically what's happening and specifically young people, I don't know, between... young teen to probably 30, anxiety, depression, panic attacks are all at an all-time high. Self-loathing, you know, it's kind of plateaued over the last few years, but it's an all-time high. And there are lots of things, not to point fingers at or blame, but things to look at so we can perhaps problem solve and look at other options. So one of the first things being politically what was going on in the States and then probably subsequently a little further down the line in the UK with how we started to think as individuals rather than as a community. And that was a real switch in time where politics almost sort of molded you into a society that had to think in a very singular way. How the hell do we get back to thinking like a community again? Because that's going to help save us, right?
That's what I was working on all morning. My next book is about not the future in 20 years, but how do we flip everything on its head? And maybe it can't even be done. And exactly this morning I was saying, were we always this self-centered? Were we always this? And so
we can't have been. Though.
No, we don't.
We were in tribes and packs. And
then we were at our peak. And then, listen, you can't say, it's like saying about technology, ooh, let's fight it. It happened. That's like stopping a child growing up. Mm. The world grew up by our agriculture. And then we had, this is mine and that, don't touch it. And then war started. And then a guy, I was writing it this morning, called out, well, Rockefeller wasn't helpful and Andrew Carnegie wasn't helpful. They started to say it's natural, it's nature that makes us the aggressor. And they made up the word survival of the fittest, meaning the toughest win. Darwin didn't mean that. Mm. And so we started to think like Gordon Gekko in Wall Street said, you know, greed is good, greed is thing. The poor have to suffer because there's a reason for it. That only started at that time. That wasn't then. That wasn't before. And so we still connect. And now religion caught on, you know, the Christian right, saying, yes, if you're poor, you deserve to be poor. And the rich really should take care of themselves. And that's become our ethos ever since the industrial age. It wasn't always
there. It's horrifying.
Now, how do you turn it on its head when we live in more and more fear? That's my next book. And it just might be, can you swear on this show?
Of course you can.
I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm learning in my book. Mm. I don't know. Mm. But I'm one chapter's on what schools, what's not the future, but right now, are there any green shoots in how they're training kids? Like you're saying, what are they doing? How are they getting their minds?
Schooling has to change.
Yeah.
It has to change.
Then I'm with AI. That's almost impossible. Oh, is God. There anything in AI that's working? Not just physically, which is important, you know, to give you a new stint, but
AI
emotionally.
Scares me more than anything.
Well,
it's
coming.
Terrifying.
Yeah, but it's coming. So, like, I had somebody yesterday, and somebody else is coming today who's building robots. And so, I need to know.
I don't want robots.
Well, you know, shout all you want.
I know.
Yeah, it's coming.
It's terrifying, like, because surely that's going to emphasize that individuality.
You don't know, though. I'm trying to find the green shoots. I don't know. And I may just say, there's not going to be an answer.
No.
But is anybody working for the good? Mm. That's all my question.
Rather than it always rooting back to money, which is the problem?
It's always the minute it becomes commercial. It's spoiled. So how do you turn the economy on its head? I mean, that's another chapter. But
yeah,
that's
another book.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You're talking about somebody who knows nothing. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to talk to some experts.
Well, you definitely don't know nothing. Okay, yeah. Well, let's talk about religion then, because you just mentioned it. So even if you're not religious, I don't necessarily relate to any particular religion, but I have beliefs and I have faith. But I also think that, like a lot of people out there who aren't religious, I sort of subconsciously still buy into guilt and shame, which it probably is derived from a religion.
Weird. I mean, I'm not being spooky, but I was literally in a restaurant. That's where I tried to get a taxi and why I'm late, because I was writing about, I could show you for the next book. Mm. It was about guilt and shame and envy and, you know, viciousness and how that ties in.
Yeah.
With what religion did for us.
Yeah, because it's obviously there's beautiful things about religion, but the caveat to all the faith and the hope is that the guilt and the shame. And I think for me, that's where a lot of my self-loathing will come from.
I think, no, we have all guilt and shame. And again, in how do you, How to Be Human. It says these things were made for a reason. You know, disgust, we had to pull our lip up and make a face so that people would know that's poisonous, don't eat it. Shame was for feeling, you know, before language, feeling, oh my God, the tribes, I'm letting the tribe down. And so shame was created. And then guilt made you feel, you know, it's enough. There's another reason. Everything had his reason back then. Now we have these traits, and now they're misfiring because we're applying it to not being invited to the party rather than its pure form. Yeah. So I was writing, religion was wondrous to say, well, put your faith in somebody else. It's not your fault. So the gods took away the pain in a way, and I envy them.
Yeah,
you know, because we suffer with the guilt. They go, oh, please, you know, if you have somebody to ask to help you, it's the load is much easier.
Well, having any sort of hope or faith gets you out of bed, doesn't it? Otherwise,
you
wouldn't leave the front
door. So the rest of us who don't believe in Santa are left scrounging around going, oh, my God, I'm such a terrible person. Yeah. I have guilt. They're going, oh, well, we all have guilt, but Jesus can fix it.
And then looking at technology, one of the main things, I guess, technology has done over the last decade is emphasize comparison. So now we all think we know what everyone else is doing. We all make huge assumptions based on like 1% of somebody's life because of social media, the internet, how we fed news, all of it, and how comparison is really affecting our mental health. You know, it's omnipresent because of social media now, and how the hell we tackle that, because, you know, there's some brilliant mavericks out there doing great things on social media, online, being very authentic and real and creating a sense of community. But brilliant people like Bryony Gordon, who is an amazing judge, anyone who's doing anything that is connective, I guess, and positive and being authentic, rather than the other side of it, which we all make assumptions on. People have these perfect lives, everything's great. And that is, of course, for the younger demographic, so detrimental to, and we've seen awful things happen because of that as well. And I guess, again, looking at the mindfulness around that and how we don't buy into it and how we look at those patterns. And again, if that's reversible.
Our only hope is some kind of training of the mind. It might not be mindfulness. So far, when I ask that question, nobody else knows another exercise, you know, but hopefully someday there'll be a gym and a mental Fitbit that'll say, okay, your cortisol's up. Here's something to do. Listen to music, breathe, whatever. It'll tell you to cool it, which means even when they're negotiating for peace settlements, people will know we're not making sense anymore. Who knows? But the thing is, it's I hate to say it because I love money, but it's money that corrupts. I don't know. You know, the minute there's a Bryony Gordon or anybody, you know, that did it pure of heart, which supposedly Zuckerman did too, the minute cash comes in and cash talks and bad news talks. So how do we stop our, you know, it isn't, okay, I acknowledge now, it's not really the human condition. It really only happened a few hundred years ago. And we're only 5,000 years old anyway, so we're babies. But can we flip it on its head at some point? To be honest, right now, I don't think so. But that's why I'm
implode because it's getting so ridiculous now. Is
it
that
won't? No, we'll have to create another race, or you know, we'll be cyborgs and we'll be able to live longer. But all of this is coming. Nothing is an accident. You know, we had to develop language. We had to develop. Then everything that we created, our evolution is always an extension. So even our ears, you know, so we could hear further, then language came, then, you know, transistors, then television, then we always, always will keep expanding it. And you can bang your fists. That's how we are.
But is that why we're struggling? Because we're not evolving at the rate that everything exterior is to us.
Our brains, part of it is still Stone Age. It doesn't know how to work all this equipment.
And maybe it shouldn't evolve in that way. Maybe we should be
But that's why you're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, it's because I'm thinking, as a species, we've survived. As an individual, we're going down.
Yeah.
So how do you answer that question? I don't know.
Fuck.
Yeah. But I find all this interesting.
In Frazzled, you go to a retreat and you...
I'm going to one again on Saturday for 10 days.
I want to go to a retreat. When my kids are older, I'm going to go to retreats. I know, but I'm so into that.
Yeah,
I'm
up for the hardcore.
I'm up for this specific exercise where you sat in front of someone and you looked directly into their soul, essentially, through their eyes. And you had to feel compassion for each stage of their childhood.
You didn't have to.
It was suggested that you would do so.
No, it doesn't. You just do.
You just did it.
If days and days go by where you're facing the devil in your mind, because when you do these retreats, it's 12 hours a day of mindfulness, which is breaks people.
But, yeah.
You do in the end. It's like arm wrestling. Part of your brain just goes, okay, I can't take this anymore. And it sort of gives up. It still, things come in, but the voices are so quiet. And you taste, you know, I fell in love with a digestive because you taste food. You're not blithering and your mind is pretty quiet.
Yeah.
So people's eyes are rolled in the back of their heads. And also fell in love with a potato. And I broke the silence, ran into the kitchen and said, how did you make this potato? And they said, with a potato and oil from Tesco's.
Love
I'd
it.
Never, but,
your appreciation was high.
Oh, man. And you watch ants. They're walking around. You watch their business and things.
So this exercise, right?
You couldn't do it right off because you'd laugh or you'd be embarrassed. But after a few days, to bring you back, because the point of all this exercise is so that you pass your state to the next person. Because I love that we work like neural Wi-Fi. So why people do these exercises, this isn't to sit in their cocoon of self-absorption, but that if you're a mother and you can cool it down, that's the only way you pass it to your kid. And then they pass it and it ripples effects. That's how you improve the world.
Not
by some politician telling you, you're going to save your taxes. It's by cooling yourself enough that you'll be able to figure out, okay, now I have to put the phone down. Now I have to go do that. Within your capacity, you know, are you going to change the world by shouting?
No.
Figure out what's your capacity. But anyway, eventually to bring us back and some into connection, because you've been sitting there for more than a week, he has you turn to each other. I mean, you're not impromptu. Somebody's leading you. So you look at the other person, and you haven't spoken for quite a while. And one by one, you tell each other what you had hoped for as a kid, what made you laugh, what was upsetting.
But just through your eyes? Not speaking? Or you are speaking?
No, he's asking.
Right, okay.
He's asking. Look at each other and think, what was it like as a child? And you are looking at each other. So you start to see beyond how you label them. Because if I look at you, I think, oh, she's really successful and she's really pretty. And it could evoke my envy. But when you look in the eyes and somebody says, what did you feel, you know, when you were a little kid? Did you feel failure? When was, you know, what was it like when you were playing? Then as an adult, what was your first disappointment? What made you really? And you're looking at another person and you see right in. Mm. And boy, do you make a connection stronger than anything I've ever done with a friend. I mean, you see people almost weeping because there's somebody else like you.
Yeah, well, because we are all the same.
All the same when you look deep in. Now imagine they do negotiations like that.
Imagine
it, that there is no them and us.
But also just living like that, because we are all slaves to our phones to some extent. Even if you're not big on social media or emailing, you know, we do rely on them for so much. And that does dilute our face-to-face time and our eye contact and the need for that. And perhaps, again, it's getting back to basics with that,
We just might not.
We just might not.
And the guy who came over yesterday has a robot rabbit, and it responds to your touch. So it, like a cat, it moves, it moves in a kind of loving way. Its pupils get bigger or smaller. And so it creates this feeling of love, but you'll say it's not the real thing. It isn't the real thing, but like in Japan, they need robots now. And a lot of these old people who are isolated, it's better than a kick in the ass.
Yeah.
I'm not for it. I'm just saying that's what's on the market.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to get it artificially, maybe. If we can't have
a robot rabbit.
You might not have a choice.
I know.
You get a robot husband.
No. I mean, sometimes that'd be cool, but no.
Yeah.
But it's a no for me.
But I'm telling you, I'm not talking about next week. I'm talking about, maybe 5 years.
Yeah, it scares the shit out of me.
It's coming. That's the thing, is that we are scared shitless, and that's keeping us also in the dark, is that we have to start saying, lower the fear. That's the first thing.
Is there a positive, even in that fear, in, if we are all scared of change like that, and we're scared of of how dark it could go or how weird it could get, that actually then we have to take note of the basic, the simple, and getting back to...
Yeah, that's your choice, though. That'll right. be your choice.
Yeah.
Like, do you really...
Is it not a reaction, do you think, then? Globally, that's not going to be a reaction that we all go, oh,
I
we
think
should
it'll
get
be an individual thing.
Yeah.
Is that, like in Frazzled, where I have a brain scan before and after a retreat, I always try to go on the journey in the book, and then in How to Be Human, I had to do... The book ended with forgiveness, and I happened to do Who Do You Think You Are? And so it took me on my own journey. I can't just write the book. And so this one, with this book, I want to see, can I? I don't think I can. Walk the talk a little bit. I'm not saying extreme. I'm just saying I want to see what happens in a year. Can I do? I already signed up to work in a refugee camp in March. Now, I've never done that, and I'm not saying that'll make me into a good person, but I'm trying little driblets of what does it take to get us off our addiction of greed, because I'm as deep as you can get. I am the greediest. Well, I think maybe Gordon Gekko might be worse, but I'm greedy. I want to see if I can get off it a little bit.
Well, I think that's bloody brilliant. I can't wait to read your new book whenever
it
gets done.
I might never get done.
Of course it's going to get done. I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to. And we should let you get on with it. And just thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. I love seeing you.
Your energy and your words. It's
even
been
though
so
I've been
nice
sick.
Talking to you. Well, thank you so much.
Oh,
Ruby.
No. I love you. Thank you.
Ruby Wax, I bloody love you. Thank you so much for coming on Happy Place and basically sharing all of your knowledge with us. I, for one, can't wait to read that new book. Cannot wait. Now, next week, we meet Brit Award winner Sam Fender.
So there's a line at the beginning of the prelude. It says, I'm firing on three cylinders, if only I knew what you meant. And that was actually the last thing he said to my friend Richie. He was like, oh, Richie said, oh, how are you doing? He went, oh, I'm firing on three cylinders. And Richie just didn't think anything of it. And obviously, that just he just meant, oh, no. I'm not fully right, you know what I mean?
Hear that and all of our past episodes when you subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere really. A massive thanks again to Ruby, to my producer, Mr. Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and you lot, seriously, right, thank you for listening. Thank you for leaving comments on Instagram and wherever you listen to your podcasts, and also for, you know, occasionally stopping me in the street and giving me a hug because you liked it. It really means the world because I love making this podcast. So thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.